we know for a fact that it ain't over until it's over. There is much, much yet to be counted.
Lisa Murkowski remains optimistic about her chances to win against Joe Miller. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 25th of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the national perspective on last night's primary.
Alaska has made itself ground zero for the rest of the election campaign. I rather think we'll be paying close attention to Alaska.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
With all but two precincts reporting, Joe Miller is holding his lead in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. Less than 1,500 votes separate him from incumbent Lisa Murkowski. The Division of Elections says it has at least 7,600 absentee ballots to count, a process that will begin next Tuesday and continue through early September. Murkowski was quiet last night as the results were coming in, but she spoke briefly about the vote count this morning.
Obviously, it's been a long night for all of us, and a night that has turned out differently than certainly we would have hoped.
Murkowski talked at her campaign headquarters in Anchorage, standing with her two teenage sons and her husband, Vern Martell. She said she's optimistic the absentee ballots will put her on top.
Think about the history of some of our elections around here. It was just a couple years ago, Senator Stevens went to bed winning. And at the end of the day, the election changed around. I talked to Don Young last night. He was quick to remind me that in his last race, he was behind the whole time and came out on top. So we know for a fact that it ain't over until it's over. And we are certainly at that point right now. There is much, much yet to be counted.
Murkowski says she hasn't had much time to consider what went wrong for her campaign last night. She says there will be plenty of time for speculating later on, but right now she isn't looking back with any regrets.
I'm very proud. I'm very proud of the campaign that we ran. It was good. It was positive. It was upbeat. And, you know, there's been a suggestion out there, if there's any kind of second guessing that goes on, there's been a suggestion out there that in order to win in politics today, you've got to run a negative campaign. I don't think Alaskans want that. I don't think Americans want that.
Despite lots of speculation on what Murkowski may do if she loses the election, she says it's premature to talk about that with thousands of absentee ballots yet to count. And her campaign manager, John Bitney, says he's hoping the work the campaign did getting the message out on absentee voting will pay off.
As a campaign effort, we had a very strong program of working absentee voters to, encourage them to vote for Lisa and cast their ballot as such.
Meanwhile, Joe Miller was mostly quiet today on his surprise success at drawing primary votes. Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai says once the final vote tally is in, one of the candidates can request a recount. An automatic recount will happen only if the race is tied. Political scientists and pundits across the country are marveling at Joe Miller's strong showing in yesterday's primary. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
One of the most often quoted, referenced, and talked to pundits in the Washington scene is Larry Sabato. He's a political science professor at the University of Virginia and director of its Center for Politics, and is D.C.'s go-to guy when you need some political perspective. His website, Sabato's Crystal Ball, boasts that in 2008, it was 100% right, predicting every Senate and gubernatorial race across the country. So was he surprised about yesterday's Republican Senate election turnout?
Every now and then you have a shocker like this that comes out of nowhere. And this is probably the most shocking result of the entire election season.
There are other examples this year of incumbents being given a run for their money, but Sabato says they were all predicted, like in Utah, where the sitting senator, Republican Bob Bennett, was beat in a primary by a Tea Party-supported candidate. On the other hand, Washington saw Murkowski as a rising star, not someone easily challenged. Sabato awoke this morning to the latest election tallies in the Murkowski-Miller contest, expecting to see a solid and clear Murkowski win.
And I pulled up the Alaska results, and let me tell you, I thought I was still dreaming. I mean, I literally thought I was still asleep. I could not believe the results.
Sabato now attributes Miller's strong showing to a number of factors, the abortion referendum on the ballot, which brought out conservatives, Sarah Palin's endorsement and the Tea Party presence, and America's disappointment with Washington. But Sabato says nearly everyone got the crystal ball predictions wrong.
I think any political observer in the country who tells you that he or she was not surprised by this result is lying. There literally was no one that I have been able to find in print outside of the Tea Party or Miller's campaign suggesting that Miller would actually win or come close. Some didn't even think he would come reasonably close.
He says this isn't the end of the twists and turns, and there could be more surprises in store. If Murkowski loses, would she consider becoming a write-in candidate? Will another Democrat, one with greater name recognition than Scott McAdams, be convinced by party higher-ups to try and muscle into the race? Sabato says he's staying tuned.
Alaska has made itself ground zero for the rest of the election campaign. I rather think we'll be paying close attention to Alaska. So Alaska's getting spoiled. You know, if it isn't Sarah Palin in 2008, it's Joe Miller and associated characters in 2010.
Sabato says just because Miller did so well in the primary doesn't mean all of Alaska would support him. The political scientist says primary races generally draw small turnouts and are dominated by activists. He says in this case, they seem to have had a strong effect. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The Miller-Murkowski contest motivated some Richardson Highway community voters in yesterday's primary. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, they were seeking to shake things up.
Republican voters in four communities along the Richardson Highway said Tuesday that it's time for change, like North Pole voter Benny Williams, who says it's time to throw the bums out.
The best thing to do is, in my view, you get them knucklehead top politicians out.
It was a refrain that was repeated often in interviews conducted on the eve of the primary election among voters in Delta, Salcha, North Pole, and Fairbanks. Here's Connie Kowalis, another North Pole voter.
I think we do need a change in Washington. We do need a change in Juneau. And something else has got to happen.
Dave Scott, who turned out to vote in Delta Junction, says the change he wanted to see most was the occupant of the U.S. Senate seat, now held by Lisa Murkowski.
I want to see Murkowski unseated. One of the reasons is, in the first place, I think she got the seat originally illegally, and I'm still got my dander up about that. But she's voted too many times with the establishment, and that's not what we need.
The race between Murkowski and her Republican rival, Joe Miller, was by far the biggest draw for Republican voters we talked with. Scott says he wasn't sure at first, but he finally went for Miller after he got the backing of a certain high-profile power broker.
When Sarah and the Tea Party endorsed Miller, and that decided me right there.
Dave Zawadzki, a Fairbanks Republican, was among those who thought Murkowski deserved another term.
She's been in there a long time. She's got a lot of a pull, and she's good. As far as I'm concerned, she does everything for the... She's always pulling for Alaska like she should. And all the other bad-mouthing that the other candidate does about her, he's full of crap.
A Miller supporter in Salcha, Charlie Draper, says times have changed. It's no longer good enough just to bring home the bacon.
The system of judging your performance by how much money you get for the state is ending, and we're seeing the change right now. And it's going to keep going to the next election in the same direction.
Republican voters around Alaska seem to share the opinions of those voters based on the returns that kept the race neck and neck throughout the night last night, with Miller hanging on to a lead of around 2 percentage points. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the NTSB releases the first report on the crash that killed Ted Stevens.
There's nothing in there that points to a cause or factor or anything like that. It's basically putting the accident on record.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northrim Bank, helping you get from where you are to where you want to be. Achieve more. Northrim Bank for Business. Information at northrim.com. Member FDIC.
Scott McAdams, who won last night's Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate, is still mostly unknown around the state. McAdams is the mayor of Sitka. He says he's prepared to beat Joe Miller in November if Miller maintains his lead in the Republican primary. McAdams says although the Tea Party Express is a national phenomenon, he doesn't think it reflects Alaska's values of family and community. He says they are the party of no.
Things like developing Alaska through congressionally vetted appropriations, but they also say no to social progress, I believe, in the 20th century. I think the Tea Party has been clear in rejecting many of the things the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, and other great progress that our society's made.
McAdams says he believes Alaska needs federal help to develop new models of energy development into the future.
I take issue with this concept that Alaska somehow is pork laden. Alaska, like so many other Western states, has relied on our partners at the federal level to help us develop our infrastructure. But we're a young state and we still have a long way to go.
He says he didn't always agree with Senator Murkowski's decisions, but he respected her work as a public servant. If Miller prevails, he says it's an unfortunate end to her career as senator, but he'll focus on the campaign fight with Miller.
I believe it's going to take all of our diligence, all of our hard work to ensure that Joe Miller and the Tea Party Express aren't able to take root in Alaska.
McAdams said he didn't have figures on how much money he has on hand currently. Michael Carey has watched the results of the Murkowski-Miller race come in with a good bit of shock. He says there's a mathematical chance Murkowski could win once the absentee ballots are counted, but it's unlikely. Even though during the 2008 election, Democrat Mark Begich eked out a slim victory over Ted Stevens that same way.
First of all, there are going to be less ballots now than were out in the Begich-Stevens race. And second, I know this for a fact, how hard the Begich people worked the absentee ballots in that general election a couple of years ago, a presidential election. And I'm pretty confident that the Murkowski people did not work the remaining ballots, the absentee ballots, as hard as the Begich people did. No offense to them, it's just a different time and a different situation.
There's been a lot of speculation on what she might do if she does, in fact, lose. Do you think she would try to stay in the race? And if so, what's the most likely scenario?
The choices appear to be very poor. She could run on some other party's line, as in theory, as Wally Hickel did when he ran as an AIP. But it's pretty hard to imagine her running as a Libertarian or an AIP. And it's hard to believe the public would receive it enthusiastically, and she might have to pay for most or all of it.
What do you think may have had the most influence here, Joe Miller not having as much money as Lisa Murkowski? Do you think it was the Palin endorsement, or was it the Tea Party Express push?
Well, the Tea Party Express was really important because they spent a whole bunch of money on Miller's behalf that brought him to the attention of the Alaska public. We are about to have, or could have, a very unusual Senate race. 90 days ago, nobody, except a few people in Fairbanks, a few people in Sitka, had heard of Joe Miller and Mr. McAdams. They just were not on anybody's radar map. Now one of them is probably going to be a senator. I think that Miller was able to vilify Washington, and there's a portion, and he did it successfully, for the Alaska public that responds to that. And he brilliantly painted Lisa Murkowski as a liberal. He turned her into Tony Knowles.
Do you think McAdams will have a shot?
Yes, but the Democratic National Committee and people in Washington are going to have to spend some money, and they're going to have to spend it in a hurry. If you can invent Joe Miller in a few weeks, you can invent Scott McAdams in a few weeks.
Do you think this result has any larger meaning for politics in Alaska?
That is a good question. There is some lesson in this. We were represented a couple years ago by Ted Stevens, who was known as the master of pork and the king of earmarks. And now we're going to have a senator, if if our friend Mr. Miller prevails, who has run directly against that and says, you know, the kind of government spending, wasteful government spending is wrong. He's going to have to make an adjustment for here in Alaska, but it'll be interesting to see what that adjustment is. Maybe it'll just be that federal spending in Alaska is by definition good. Elsewhere, it's bad.
Michael Carey is a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. Governor Sean Parnell and Republican running mate Mead Treadwell presented a united front in a post-election appearance today. Parnell says now that the dust of the primary is behind them, they aim to be the team to move Alaska forward. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
After a tumultuous primary election, victors Sean Parnell and Mead Treadwell stood in front of cameras today in a show of teamwork as the Republican candidates for the November election. Parnell said it is a time for Alaskans to solve problems together, saying Treadwell's experience in business and international relations could be valuable assets to the state administration.
One of the things that I think that Mead brings to this ticket as now the Parnell-Treadwell ticket is just his long history with business, with international issues, with Arctic policy. So I'm looking forward to growing our economy using the expertise and experience that Mead brings to the table.
Treadwell, for his part, said he was delighted to be Parnell's running mate. He said the state's economy will benefit from party unity.
And I know this has been a feisty race, both in the governor's race and the lieutenant governor's race, and I'm going to work very hard on party unity. Alaskans basically want the same thing. They want an economy that works. They know we need to fill the pipeline, and we don't need to rewrite history. We need to move forward. We need a deal on a gas pipeline, and we need to know what we're doing to diversify the economy and all get behind it.
Treadwell is a former chair of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission and has rubbed shoulders with the U.S.'s Arctic neighbors who face problems similar to Alaska, he says. He says he's helped stitch the Arctic neighborhood together during his career and through dozens of trips to Asia has insights into Alaska's markets in Japan and Korea. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Parnell will face Democrat Ethan Berkowitz in November. Diane Benson won the Democrats' lieutenant governor's race. Ballot Measure 1, dubbed the anti-corruption proposition by proponents and gag law by opponents, suffered a more than 32,000 vote drubbing. Alaska Education Association President Barb Ngayak was one of the leaders against Measure 1.
On the face of it, people, you know, understand that corruption is a bad thing and we're all against corruption. But what this would do is prevent people from exercising their free speech rights. And this is a ballot initiative that has been tried around the country in different states, and it has been soundly defeated in a lot of other places.
Meanwhile, ballot measure 2, which will require doctors to notify parents or guardians if a minor under the age of 18 seeks an abortion, captured around 55% approval. Bernadette Wilson was the vote yes on 2 campaign manager.
I've talked to a lot of concerned parents. I've talked to a lot of parents that want to be there for their children, and they want to be there in good times and in the bad times. And for those kids that come from unhealthy home environments, they want to be there too. I think that, you know, Alaskan voters sent the message loud and clear that we want to be there for these children, no matter what the circumstances are. We are there to help them through it.
This primary's closest race was for the Republican nomination for House District 12 in the Valdez area. The unofficial results have Eric Feige leading with 666 votes, followed by Don Hayes with 660 and Pete Fellman with 658. The eventual winner will face Democrat Bert Cottle. The Division of Elections reports voter turnout at 27.5% yesterday. That's in line with the 2004 primary, where turnout was 28%. Turnout in the 2006 and 2008 primaries stood at 35% and 40%, respectively.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
The search is continuing for a fifth day into a plane missing in Katmai National Park and Preserve. The National Park Service says 8 aircraft are being used in today's search. The search planes are flying a grid pattern and looking closely at likely flight routes. The small plane with a pilot and 3 Park Service employees was reported missing Saturday afternoon in bad weather. The National Transportation Safety Board has released the preliminary report regarding the August 9th plane crash near Lake Elegnagik that took the life of 5 people, including former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens. KDLG's Mike Mason looked over the preliminary report and filed this story.
Peter Knudsen is a spokesman for the National Transportation Safety Board. He says normally the shortest part of an investigation like this is the actual on-scene part of the investigation.
Once the investigator returns to his office, he'll continue the investigation by gathering more factual information, looking at aircraft and maintenance records, pilot certification, that would look at license and ratings, recency of flight experience, look at the medical certificate of the pilot, see if there were any issues there, do a 72-hour background check. We may test the engine or various aircraft components depending on what the investigators determined from their initial examination.
Many observers believe that weather was to blame for the accident, or at least a contributing factor, and the NTSB report observed that at the time of the accident, marginal visual meteorological conditions were reported at the Dillingham Airport, which was just 18 miles away from the site of the accident. The report adds that the weather conditions at the accident site at the time of the accident are unknown, but searchers apparently encountered instrument meteorological conditions when they arrived at the site of the accident about 6 hours later. One of the contributing factors that hampered the search for the airplane was that no emergency locator transmitter or ELT signal was detected during the aerial search. The preliminary report confirms that the airplane was equipped with an Artex ME-406 ELT, but the examination of the wreckage revealed that the ELT had separated from its mounting bracket during impact, and the antenna cable was found separated from the ELT. NTSB spokesman Peter Knudsen confirms that the preliminary report just lays out the facts that are known about the crash and does not include any information about the possible cause of the crash.
The preliminary report only includes the factual information that we have been able to document and verify at this early point in the investigation. There's nothing in there that points to a cause or factor or anything like that. It's basically putting the accident on record for all to see, and it's really just the beginning of our investigative process.
As part of the ongoing investigation, personnel with the NTSB have been interviewing anybody with information about the crash, the airplane, the pilot, or the weather conditions in the area at the time of the accident. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The bells of St. Michael's Orthodox Cathedral in Sitka are expected to ring again in the near future and ring correctly. In partnership with the Sitka Historical Society, the Orthodox Church has rebuilt the belfry stairs in St. Michael's and has cleaned and refurbished the 8 bells. All that's left is teaching a new generation of Sitkins to ring them. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The original St. Michael's Cathedral, built by Russian colonists from hewn timbers, was famously destroyed on New Year's in 1966, its 8-bell carillon rendered into molten slag. The church was rebuilt, and recast bells were reinstalled by 1976. The bells have often rung in Sitka since then, but they haven't sounded anything like this. This is a historic recording preserved by the National Park Service. It's believed to be John Williams, or perhaps his nephew Philip Williams, the last in several generations of his family who did not just ring the bells, but played them. It was recorded around 1960.
It's not just ringing 1, 2. You're using your feet, all of your arms, and 2, 3 chords at a time. So you actually play melodies.
Father Sergius Gerken has been the parish priest in Sitka since May of this year. He says there is an extensive body of musical literature for the bells, which are tuned to Western ears in a C7th chord. The biggest bell weighs 1,400 pounds and sounds the G note below middle C.
So the first
I'm standing with Father Sergius and Sitka Historical Society Director Bob Mettinger, four stories over Lincoln Street in the refurbished belfry. I'm not totally comfortable in tall, rickety structures, but the rebuilt cathedral is constructed of iron girders and looks reassuringly sturdy. Father Sergius says there is a 1,000-year-old tradition of bell ringing in Orthodox Christianity, much of it musical, especially during services and holidays, and much of it merely practical.
I have my Mickey Mouse watch, and this tells me it's 3:30 right now. Who could afford a clock or a watch except the emperor or some rich merchant? People didn't have one. So the thing was to be able to ring the bells for matins, for midday, any special occasion, or alarm when there's a fire. Church bells ring, everybody congregates. It was the focal part of being able to go ahead and if a ship comes in, would be able to notify the rest of the people that the ship is in. This gives us an opportunity then to also do something along those lines. Bells were an important part of town.
Between the destruction of the original cathedral and the hazardous conditions that developed in the wooden stairways and hatches in the reconstructed belfry, Sitka lost its tradition of bell playing, but that is about to change. Father Stefan Malik from the Orthodox Diocese of San Anselmo, California, has agreed to visit Sitka in September to train new ringers. Malik himself was trained at St. Tikhon's Monastery in South Canaan, Pennsylvania. Bob Mettinger says it's a chance to recapture some of Sitka's past.
Right now, we are in the throes of trying to recruit ringers. We'd like to get up to four, perhaps one or two more, and reading music is very, very helpful.
St. Michael's would like to find recruits both within and outside of the Orthodox congregation. Mettinger says the Historical Society supports the idea of bringing music back into Sitka's daily life, whether striking the hour or greeting arriving ships. Some barriers do remain. During work to improve the four flights of steep stairs to the belfry, significant rot was discovered in the floor of the belfry itself. Replacing it has punched a $15,000 hole into the project's budget. Mettinger hopes tour revenue of the refurbished tower may cover some of that cost. He and Father Sergius also hope to create a program to allow major donors, even those who don't read music, a chance to play the bells.
Oh, be Quasimodo for a day. That would be great.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. You'll also find a primary election slideshow there. You can follow us on Twitter at aprn. We had reports tonight from Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Dave Waldron and Kristen Spack. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Working late? Hear Alaska News Nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.